Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Hey, I'm Ann Eller with you. And I have a real treat for you this afternoon. A friend of mine for many, many, many years has agreed to come on and be a victim. No, I didn't say that. Give us some creative insight into her life. This is Karen Petit. She is a public relations director at USC's Arnold School of Public Health. And, of course, she grew up here in Greenwood. She got a bachelor's degree in journalism from USC. And during her newspaper career, was an editor at the Index Journal. And now she writes and still is public relations director at USC. She writes children's books. So how are you doing today, Karen?
I'm doing great, Anne, and thank you so much for having me this afternoon.
Absolutely. So, let's see, you had to come up here from Columbia, and I guess you said, what, the drive was uneventful?
It was uneventful, thank goodness, and I brought along my two canine companions, my dog Louise, who is a standard poodle, a rescued standard poodle, and also a poodle Bichon mix named Dixie. So I have a large dog and a small dog.
Okay, so they are, well, I guess they must be in the car then, yes?
No, they're staying at my family's home here in Greenwood. No,
okay.
I left them where they would be more comfortable, or should I say where I would feel more secure. With all of these beautiful collectibles and things here at Sharp Facets, I didn't want there to be a purchase that I would have to make this afternoon.
Well, you know, Gracie would have loved to have had some play companions right here. We could have spent the whole time saying, sit down, get over there. That's right.
Don't do that.
Right.
Stop.
This will be a lot more fun here. But, Karen, you actually, I guess, moved to Greenwood when you were five, right?
That's correct. My father had finished dental school at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and my mother's family was from the Greenwood area, Lawrence County specifically, and so when Daddy finished dental school, they moved to Greenwood so that Mother could be closer to her family, and I started first grade at Marywood Elementary School, and this was home until I went to college and got my first job.
Yeah, well, so you really knew Greenwood as old Greenwood. I mean, I bet because you love to read and everything so much, you probably spent a lot of time at the Greenwood Library.
I did spend a lot of hours at the Greenwood Library, and I can still smell the books from the library. I also spent a lot of time at the bookmobile that came through our neighborhood, and the library was a great friend to me growing up.
Yeah. Have you been there since it's become the Veterans Center?
I have not been there since it became the Veterans Center, so I need to go in and check that out.
Yes. You will not believe how different the library, the old library, is now the new Greenwood Veterans Center. It really is phenomenal. You should check that out.
I will.
Yeah, it's neat. So when you were growing up, though, what did you think you wanted to be?
Initially, I wanted to be a pediatrician.
Pediatrician.
Exactly. And I don't know why, but I did think that that's what I wanted to be. But as I continued more in school, I realized that I had a great love for writing in addition to loving to read. And I think you can't be a good or great writer if you're not a good or great reader. And so by the time I was in high school, I pretty much knew that I was not going to be a pediatrician and that I was going to continue on some path where I would use my love for reading and writing. And I decided to go to USC, where I pursued a degree in journalism.
You know, journalism today is so different, though, isn't it, Karen? I mean, even what they do for reporting and everything, totally different.
It is very different. It's faster. Not that we didn't have deadlines, but because newspapers have websites, they're constantly updating throughout the day. So gone are the days when people would actually type a story on a piece of paper and send it to be edited and then send it to, you know, for the typesetting. And yes, I'm old enough to remember all of that. I was a child prodigy, of course.
That's right.
But, you know, now, I mean, and truly when I began my career in journalism, I mean, when I had my job, I was working on a computer at that point. But I do remember people typing on paper and and sending it to someone else to edit and then on for the typesetting. But even so, today's pace is so much faster than it was at that time.
Oh, you know, and when you're right, when you think about the internet, they are constantly looking for source and information. It's not like where you look forward to getting the newspaper either in the morning or the afternoon. It is only part of the way that you get your news.
We get news through so many different outlets. You can get it on your phone. You can get news on your computer, your television, you know, your traditional newspaper electronically in all different formats. So, you know, news is 24 hours.
Sure. It was nice in the old days when it didn't work that way, I think.
I think it was a lot nicer. Your nerves were not as frayed as they are now.
Yeah, you know, so from that standpoint, I'm not sure that's a plus, right? To be able to have all this news all the time.
I'm not sure that it is either. It's just there's so much information coming at you that at some point I think people start to push back. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is still only so much information that you can absorb in the course of a day.
Sure. So I just thought that's an interesting interesting to look at things from different angles. Sometimes I wonder what would happen if we just stopped the internet.
I don't know, because from a research perspective and, you know, getting information to write mm-hmm. something now is so much more convenient.
Sure.
So I think that, you know, Google has been a great friend for writers for as many years as there has been Google.
Absolutely. Now, what kind of books do you write?
I write children's books. I'm the author of a children's mystery series called The Shandon's Ivy League Mystery Series, which follows the adventures of a group of pets that solve crimes. And the series was inspired by a dog that I had adopted named Ivy.
And how did those two connect together? I mean,
right. I had been through kind of an unhappy time in my life. We all have those sure. periods of time. And I was sort of in a poor me state when a friend of mine said, and I had just adopted this dog, Ivy, and I'd never had my own dog ever as a child or as an adult. And the dog really almost just sort of fell into my lap. But my friend said, you know, to get your mind off of the things that are bothering you, why don't you write a story about your dog? And I was very skeptical about that. And I said, what kind of book? And my friend said, well, you like mysteries. Why don't you solve a book about your dog solving a mystery? So I gave it some thought, and I began writing. Mm-hmm. And the more I got into it, the more I enjoyed it. And I think, as I told you at the end of the book, I didn't want to give up my characters. So I started on the second book and kept going.
And now she's obsessed and she writes lots of books here. Yes. And, you know, if you had more time, you would probably write more, wouldn't you?
I would. Writing becomes, for those who love to write or those who love to read, it becomes a passion. And I really enjoy it. And thinking about my characters. And a lot of times I am, you know, throughout the day thinking about my characters and what they may do and what sorts of, you know, misadventures they may get into. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I spend a lot of time using my imagination.
Well, you know, when you're on the radio, you need to have a good imagination. And I credit my good imagination to growing up for the first 6 or 7 years of my life as an only child and not having many friends because we lived in a place where there weren't other kids around. So I had to entertain myself.
Exactly. And that's what I did, too. Yeah. And I did it through reading.
Sure.
And playing, you know, with your dolls and creating conversations.
Imagining a situation or something.
Yeah. And children today don't do that as much.
No. Well, we have too much. I think we have too much stimulation. You've got TV, you've got games, you've got tablets, you've got all these ways. So they don't have to use their imaginations that way. Just look at the way the games that they have out there. I saw one the other day and I was like, oh my God, this is too real.
It is.
Yeah. And I think in some aspects that's a shame.
It is.
Yeah.
I don't know what the next generation or two will be like, you know, because they haven't had to use their imaginations as much.
Well, you were telling me, in fact, we're going to talk about it when we come back, that you you have some young critiques on your books, and we're going to talk a little bit about that when we come back, plus a whole lot more. We are here with Karen Petit, and she is an author of the Shannon Ivy League Mystery Series. Don't you go away.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. Believe it or not, Gracie is over on her pillow just sleeping wonderfully right now. Who knows how long it'll last, but she is asleep right now. And we are talking with Karen Petit this afternoon. She is a public relations director at USC's Arnold School of Public Health. She also is an author, and she's done several books, and the Shannon Ivy League Mystery Series, A Paw at My Heart, started. I guess that's the one that started it all, right?
Actually, just the children, the first mystery, the mystery of the Screecher Creature. And later on, I wrote A Paw at My Heart, which is for adults, about the healing power of pets.
Sure. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. All right. So, we were talking off air that, well, first off, let's talk about this. You said you had young people who actually critique your work.
When I first wrote, when I wrote the first book, The Mystery of the Screecher Creature, I knew that I was several generations away from the children who would read my book. And even though, or that I hoped would read my book.
Right.
And so even though I felt fairly confident that it was a good story, I wasn't entirely sure whether they would take it as a good story. So I developed a friendship with a teacher in Columbia at Hand Middle School, who had a very good class of creative writers, and she allowed me to come and test my book on her sixth grade class. And so I only asked to come in for one chapter, but it proved to be such a good experience that I got to go back for two chapters, and then it just evolved until the, you know, the entire book was done. And so each of my children's books has been tested at Hand Middle School. And so right now we have launched five books from that school, which I think is amazing.
That is amazing. And, you know, going back to this creativity and imagination and everything, which we were talking about before we went to the break, I wonder how their imaginations and their creativity, as far as what you're doing with the book, how they come together.
I think that they are able to understand how a book comes together and how it's, you don't just sit down and write it and that's it. When I read to them, they listen, and they have a writer's notebook that they keep, and they write down things that they think I did well, and they report back to me on that. And then those are the praises. And then the polishes may be the things that they didn't completely understand or thought that I could do differently. And I value what they tell me, and I would say that I probably keep I take notes too from what they say, and I probably adapt 90 to 95% of the changes from questions that they have asked me.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. So literally they're actually helping you write the book.
They're letting me know what works and what doesn't work. And I always tell people everything I know about writing I learned from sixth graders. But that's not that's not entirely true, but it is a they are a good source of information and inspiration for me too. I'm testing the fifth book in the mysteries, the fifth mystery book now, The Mystery of the Perils of Paris, and that will be out in the fall.
Now, when you write this book, do you go ahead and write the book and then start going through chapter by chapter, or are you doing a couple, three chapters and then having them give you their input and then changing the story as it goes along?
Sometimes I've been able to have already finished the book by the time I get into the classroom, but right now I'm writing the book as we go along. I'm actually a couple of chapters ahead of where we are. And I think this is the one time that it's been as close to, you know, my writing the book as we go along. But that's okay, because it's driving me to finish the book. If not by the end of their semester, at least over the summer.
Do you find yourself becoming more like a sixth grader?
Well, I wish I could have as much fun as a sixth grader, or at least have as much fun as they seem to have. But I do appreciate their enthusiasm and their use of their imaginations, because they definitely see things differently at times than I do.
Did you have any problem trying to relate to sixth graders, or is that really the target market for your books?
Really third through sixth grade.
Okay.
They're chapter books, so they really hit, you know, that probably 8 years old to 12 mm-hmm. year old. Although a lot of adults have bought my books, because the series wraps up at the end of the book, but then the characters go on to the next mystery. So they're not written totally in isolation of each other. And the human characters
are... That was a smart thing to do, Karen.
Well, of course. And the human characters in the book are pretty interesting. Ivy, the main character, lives with a woman named Leelise, and then there's a senior citizen named Miss Darla, who is very flamboyant and has a lot of money and is a philanthropist.
Is that Darla Moore?
No, it's not Darla Moore. And people always ask me that.
Well,
Darla is a southern name. It's a very southern name. And so
she's a philanthropist, and she has a lot of money. Come on now, Karen.
No, not Darla Moore.
Okay.
Although Darla Moore is a very wonderful and generous philanthropist, but Darla in this book, Miss Darla is older.
Okay. There you go. Okay, we got a separation.
Very smart also, but older. And she's very flamboyant. And then we have a police officer, Detective Dave, because if Ivy and her friends were going to be solving mysteries and crimes, I realized that they probably would come across the police department. And there is a police dog named Blitz who is in the book. And then we have one of Ivy's pet friends is a pug named Ernest, and Ernest is the pet of a mystery writer, a man who is a mystery writer, Dr. G. And then we have two children in the book, Trip and Liza, who get into a lot of mischief with the pets, and they have a greyhound named Lovely and a Jack Russell Terrier named Hoover. And of course, you can't have a mystery without a black cat, so we have Spooky, and then there is a bird named Marigold.
Wow, that's that almost could be like a lot of double entendre stuff going on here, just from what you've told me in this few
mm-hmm.
minutes here.
And that does happen.
It does happen.
Mm-hmm. And in each mystery, the pets live in a city called Capital City, which I figured could
Columbia,
be
Columbia, South Carolina,
could be any city USA.
Okay,
but in the second book, they go to an adventure in the mountains, which really is the Hendersonville area of North Carolina. The third book, they go to a horse race mystery, which is patterned after more Camden.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And the horse race is in Camden. The fourth book brings them back to Capital City for a circus mystery, an old-fashioned family-type circus that is in town. And then the fifth book takes them all the way to Paris.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why you're wearing that pendant there that
yes.
has the Eiffel Tower, and doesn't it have a
has a poodle.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's what I thought. Very yes. interesting. Hey, I tell you what, I sure hope you stay right here with us. If you got a question for Karen, give us a call, 229-7984. You know that's 229-7984. Right now it is time for South Carolina Radio News. We'll be back after the news.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking with Karen Petit, who is a public relations director at USC. She's also an author, and we're actually talking to her today about her authorship. There you go, about being an author. You know, Karen, do you ever look back on the turns and everything that your life has taken, and did you ever think you would be an author?
I wanted to be an author.
Okay.
But I didn't know what story I would write. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I thought I might write a torrid romance or romance books. But
there's still time.
There is still time, yes, absolutely. But once I started writing the children's books or started writing the first book, I really realized that that probably was what I was meant to do because I had loved reading so much as a child. And I appreciated all of the great children's literature that was out there. And I'm not saying that mine is great literature, but, the opportunity to be able to write and inspire a child to read. I was at an event recently when a little girl came running past me and she said, "I'm reading your second book now." And I thought, oh my gosh, how exciting is that?
Well, you know, that is exciting. And, you know, one of the things that education is working with right now that is so tough is how we get kids to read on grade level and beyond and be able to maintain that so they can become successful in school. And it is hard to find things that interest them mm-hmm. more than games or all these other things. I think that is the challenge of the century right now for our kids.
And fortunately, there are a lot of people writing a lot of different things. Pets, animals, science fiction books, Harry Potter books. So there's something out there for everyone.
Yeah, but do you think that is South Carolina ranks very badly on reading? I mean, I think Florida, we're trying to patent some of our stuff after Florida and the education that they have, particularly that getting into third grade, and if you don't read on third grade, then they want to be able to hold you back. What do you think, since you're in the school some, seeing what's going on, and of course you are an author, what do you think about where we're headed in South Carolina, particularly with the reading aspect?
I think we have a real obligation as parents, community members, teachers, and other educators to ensure that children learn how to read and that they do have those good reading skills by the third grade, if not sooner. Because if you don't read, reading is at the heart of everything that we do. And if you don't read read at a good level, you're going to have a difficult time throughout your life.
Absolutely.
And if you want to be a teacher, you're always going to be reading to prepare for your students. If you want to be a physician, you're going to be reading everything new that's coming up. Even if you want to be a football player or a basketball player, you need to understand those contracts that somebody's going to have you sign one day. So even if you want to be a mathematician, you're going to have to read math books. So reading truly is at the heart of everything we do, and we do have an obligation to ensure that children know how to read.
Sure. We used to say, what, reading is fundamental.
Exactly.
Somewhere we got away from that for a while.
We did, and we need to get back to that point.
Sure. Now, you know, one of the other things that I was thinking about is, as you write, I suppose you write proper English?
I do. Yeah. I hope.
Yeah. Well, I was just
that's my goal.
But, you know, we think about kids and texting and what is happening to the English language. Does that bother you?
It bothers me a lot.
I knew it would. Yeah.
It does. I think that, you can compare it in some ways that if you look back to the writing of the 1700s or the 1800s, you know, our writing has changed a great deal. But people were still writing entire words. And it's almost as though we're dumbing down our writing. And another thing that is appalling to me, and I'm really dating myself by saying all of this, is that so many children do not learn to write cursive.
Well, with Common Core, you actually do away with that. How are people going to, what is going to be your signature? This is the thing that keeps bugging me. If you don't learn how to write, how do you have a signature? You have a chalk mark or something?
we are going back to the age practically where if people couldn't write, they just signed an X. And what is that? And I have, I autograph every book that I do.
Right.
And I don't just put my name. I do some sort of message. Like the first book it's Dream Big, because I always wanted to be an author. And so with that first book, so I do my signature. And you cannot imagine the number of parents who will say to their children, look at her signature. You know, she has such a beautiful handwriting. Well, that was acquired because of years of having to write, you know, the Zahner Bloser tablets going up and down and up and down, and, you know, teachers standing over you to form your letters. And at the time, it was torture. But now, it's so important.
Right, exactly. I can remember being in, I don't remember what it was, fourth or fifth grade, where the child that sat at the back of the row, we had the penmanship expert or writing for that week. We had math and all these others. And Jeff is amazed because I actually was the penmanship expert for about 4 or 5 weeks. And he goes, where is that? You know, today my signature and everything is terrible, but there is something to be said for being able to do that and the eye-hand coordination that it takes to do it.
And the other thing is, okay, if you can't write cursive, does this mean you can't read cursive and you can't go back and read documents and things that were prepared?
Manuscripts.
Right, manuscripts and letters. And to me, we still need to be able to write a thank you letter or a note to someone that's
not just dashing off a text, thanks a lot for the gift, Mom?
Exactly. I mean, we've got a little bit of manners and things involved in this as well. So I really believe that we need to teach handwriting.
I agree with you. I agree. I can't believe that it's even a subject of conversation, but in some areas it's already happening.
I heard an education major, actually a young woman who's getting her master's degree at the university, say, and you really don't need to teach handwriting anymore. And I almost fell out of my chair. She said, because, you know, so much is done on the computer. Well, yes, so much is done on the computer, but so much is also not done on the computer. And even if you print out a letter or a document to send someone, you probably still have to write.
Right.
So, you know, and handwriting used to be a source of pride with people.
It did. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Well, as we're going to talk a little bit more with Karen this afternoon about some of her other books, she's also getting ready to self-publish a couple of books. I want to ask her the difference between the two, and I certainly hope you'll stay right here. Hey, if you've got a question for Karen, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Does this make sense? We buy your gold, diamonds, jewelry, coins, sterling silver at the highest prices, paying extra for fine jewelry and quality, and we're always buying your diamonds and colored stones too. But We sell at the lowest prices, from diamonds to gemstone jewelry to sterling silver pieces and antique and estate jewelry. Always lowest prices for quality jewelry. See us today, Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon, having a fascinating conversation with author Karen Petit. She does have a day job, public relations director at USC's Arnold School of Public Health, but she has had quite a career. I think you feel that you're where you need to be.
I am where I need to be. Yes, I'm doing what I love doing most.
And, you know, doesn't that has to give you a sense of satisfaction that you've been able to accomplish this? I mean, you didn't accomplish it at 25.
No, I didn't.
But there still is so much time to be able to do the things that you love.
And that's exciting.
Exactly.
I think it's good to find your passion in whatever road in life you're on. And for me, it was probably like the second half of my life.
Sure. There are so many people that think, well, I didn't get this accomplished, so my life, I just never will be able to do my dreams. But I think what we're hearing this afternoon is you need to follow your dreams, and eventually they will come true.
That's right. Don't give up. Dream big.
Dream big. I like that. So now you said the two books that you are working on right now, you're going to self-publish.
Yes. The fifth book in the Shandon's Ivy League mystery series I'm doing on my own. And I had a small regional publisher beforehand. And then I have another book called Together in Heaven. And that's a book for younger children than the mystery series, explaining death. And that's through the eyes of a dog who has lost its mother.
Hmm. Wow. You know, what I think is fascinating, Karen, is there really is, you know, that there's a new movie out there where the child goes to heaven and
right.
then comes back. And so much of this, how we deal with death and how young people deal with it and everything is pretty fascinating. I bet that's a good book.
I hope it is. I've tested it with children.
Yes.
And I think it is. Death is never easy at any age, but as adults, we never get used to the fact that people die, but we've experienced it more in our lives. Mm-hmm. A child maybe deals with the death of a pet, or they may have a grandmother or grandfather or uncle or other family member who dies. And so for that, whatever that first experience is mm-hmm. with death, then that's probably a difficult time for them in understanding what has happened to the person and accepting that they're not coming back.
Sure.
And that their lives, depending on who the family member is or friend, will change. To some extent.
Sure, sure. So I think, you know, that type of thing, it's invaluable if you can try to at least get some of those points across, particularly, as you're saying, for that younger market.
Right, who maybe never experienced the loss of a person, maybe only a pet.
Sure. All right, so how is it different between getting having somebody else publish your book, having a publisher publish the book, and publishing, self-publishing, how do you equate the experiences? And have you ever gotten rejection letters?
Oh, yes, I've had rejection letters, and I just threw them in the trash can just where they belonged. Because at some point, you have to have confidence in what you're doing and knowing that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose for me, having been a writer for many years, not necessarily an author of books, but writing in some capacity nearly every day of my life, you know, I had the confidence to be able to write and to feel good about what I was writing, and of course to have my student critics. So that makes the idea of self-publishing a little bit easier. And also you have more control over when your book is released, or you're facing your own deadline, perhaps, and not someone else's. And you maybe have more control over an artist that you might use if your book requires illustrations.
Sure. Now, how expensive to self-publish?
It depends on whether you want to use a paperback book, you know, just go ahead and publish in paperback, or whether you want to do a hardcover book. And there are many printing houses that are specifically for self-published or print-on-demand books. And so it can be, you know, probably as inexpensive as a few hundred dollars, depending on what your book is, to, you know, maybe a couple of thousand books. I mean, and, a couple thousand dollars, excuse me.
Sure. And then, of course, there's a lot of that are just doing downloads now, right?
Right.
They're not even actually publishing a book, per se. It's all downloadable to Kindles or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The e-books and electronic transmission, which I was not a huge fan of in the beginning, but I realized that that's another avenue for people to read and perhaps reach a different audience. And as long as people are reading, does it really matter whether we're reading it as a book with pages and paper, or is the idea that we want people to read and enjoy reading?
Well, that brings up an interesting question, because that's the one they're always bringing up. What is, you know, if is it better to be able to touch the paper and turn the page, or to work with something like a Kindle where you just hear the noise?
I think it's an individual preference. Personally, I like the regular books.
The tactile feel.
Yeah, I want to feel it. I want to be able to turn the pages. You know, turn down the corner of the page if I want to, or, you know, take really good care of a book and turn it carefully and not break the spine. So it just depends. Now, my books so far have been, you know, have had paper, you know, paperback, just because of cost and trying to keep costs down, you know, for children and their parents. But, you know, I may do a few things in hardcover first and just try that. The students that I've talked to have said it doesn't make any difference to them, whether it's hardcover or ebook or whatever. If it's a good story, it doesn't matter the format.
They're going to read it however they can get it.
That's exactly right.
Well, okay. All right. Now, you also do public speaking out there.
I do.
And what type of topics are you, or who's the audience on that?
I talk to people at libraries about my books. I go to schools and talk about my books, and usually take my dog Louise, the standard poodle, with me that I have now after Ivy died. And Louise will have her own book one day. It's been written. It needs to be illustrated. And I go and talk to women's groups about the subject of domestic abuse, and that's what my book A Paw on My Heart is about, healing after an episode of domestic abuse, and how a dog named Ivy helped heal my heart and inspire, you know, my mystery series. But I mostly talk about writing and my life as a writer.
I think that's great. I think that's great. Now, you bring up an interesting point. The book that is about Louise here, it needs an illustrator to do this book?
Yes. Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I have someone who has been helping me, and I hope that she's going to continue. And if not, then I'll have to find someone. So I'm always looking for a good illustrator.
Sure. And, you know, I was wondering, what I was thinking about was you've written the book. Now, before you actually publish this book, even after you get the illustrations and everything done, do you go back through it one more time?
Oh, yes, I do. I go back through it several times just to make sure that it flows, or to make sure that if there's an idea that I've had after the writing of the book that I could, you know, add into the book. So, yes, I go back as many times as I can.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also do a blog.
I do a blog. It's called LadyLouiseSpeaks.com, and it's Monday through Friday, grammar, vocabulary, anything related to reading and writing, but it's written from the point of view of Louise, and Lady Louise is the first standard poodle to have her own grammar, vocabulary, writing blog in the world that, you
in
know,
the world.
Yes, that's Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm. And so is this one to help kids do grammar, and is it written for children?
Well, it's written for children and adults. Today's blog was about the e-release of To Kill a Mockingbird. It was announced yesterday that Harper Lee has finally given permission to have To Kill a Mockingbird released in electronic format.
It's a good thing she didn't wait much longer.
She's 88.
I know, that's what I'm thinking. So, that's pretty awesome. People need to go check that out. Lady Louise
Speaks.
LadyLouiseSpeaks.com. Mm-hmm. And check out your blog there. And also, we want to talk about, real quick, coming up May 17th and 18th, is that right? Or 16th? May 17th and 18th, down there in Columbia, you're going to be at a big event.
Yes, the South Carolina Book Festival, and I will have a booth at the book festival selling my books. And I also will be speaking to a group of elementary school children on Friday, May the 16th, who will come and learn about books from different authors, school children from the Columbia area. So that is a lot of fun, and I've done that before, but I look forward to seeing people at the actual book festival, and it's free to attend.
Well, I'm thinking I may have to get out there and get down there, but at least on Sunday, that would be fun.
It would be a lot of fun, and they have antiquarian books for sale as well, so you'll have a mixture of authors selling their books and...
Hold on just a second, Karen. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. So tell us a little bit more about this. We got a second here or two.
The book festival will be held at the Columbia Metropolitan Convention Center.
That's a big area.
It is a very big area. And there's just a wide variety, science fiction, children's, adult, self-published books, publishing houses will be there.
Authors
will be there. There'll be different periods of signing. So there are some, Pat Conroy will be there, Christopher Paul Curtis, Walter Edgar, the historian. So people need to go to scbookfestival.org to get the complete schedule of events, but there's a lot happening at the book festival.
That, so I'm going to have to talk about that on the radio and maybe see if we can't make it down there. I think that sounds like a fascinating event. Over 60 local, regional, and national authors in presentations. It's going to be very cool.
It will be very cool, and the fact that it's free, except for the books that you might buy.
Exactly.
It will be. It's well worth the drive to Columbia.
Absolutely. Well, Karen Petit, it certainly has been a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you so much
for taking the drive and sitting down with me for this hour.
I appreciate it, and I hope we'll get to come back.
Absolutely. We'll have you back. Maybe we'll have Louise say a few things next time.
She would love it.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.